All right, now it's on.
It's on.
I have to legally say that.
Wrong.
Welcome to Highway Diary. I'm your host, Eric Hollenbach. With me, Blake Ebersabel. Episode, I'm not sure. I'm in a PR snafu. I'm going to release this when, you know, I can.
We could call it 106 or 105B.
It's going to be around there. Between 104 to 118. Mr. Blake Ebersabel, your heritage, your family heritage is weird. You're from some kind of bastard island.
If you consider Chalmette an island, I mean it technically.
Before
is,
that.
Nah, okay, well.
What is Ebersabel?
Ebersabel. Okay.
Ebersabel. Ebersabel.
Ebersabel is a Basque Spanish name. My father's family, they came, like, about 100 years ago, they came over from Spain, but not from Basque land. Our branch of, like, our family, they lived, like, near Madrid. And the deal is that the name actually derives from Ibarra and Zabala, which are actual Basque names. But they were combined in the late 1700s because the people were very rich, and very rich people in Spain would combine their names rather than take one or the other.
You know, so they just kept on putting on syllables.
Yeah, they just added the two names together.
Until you're at Ebersabel.
Yeah.
After six generations.
And the Basque people, you could do a whole show about that.
So that you specifically.
But I have a whole lot more in me than just Basque.
Well, it's like an island, and
it's not an island.
No.
It's the it's a mountainous land in the north of Spain and the south west of France that straddles the Pyrenees.
And it's like wet in a territory that's. It's ambiguous as far as who controls it.
Yeah, it's called an autonomous state now. They used to have a lot of problems with the Spanish because they didn't want to basically pay rent anymore.
To the Spanish king.
To the Spanish government.
They're like,
so yeah, they're like, yeah, we want to be our own thing. Right. You know, so fuck y'all. And they've always kind of had that attitude anyway.
Do you have that attitude?
Sometimes. Yeah.
About what?
But not wanting people to control me.
You don't like authority.
Yeah.
You don't like being told what to do.
I like, yeah.
You
I
don't
like
get in line.
Thing. Yeah, fuck that shit. Fuck lines. You know, when I see a fucking line at a buffet, I'll wait.
That's very noble of you. You're from Boston.
No, unless I can be first in line. If I'm first, fuck y'all. But if I can't be first in line, I'll wait.
Getting that fried shrimp.
There'll be more. It's a buffet.
So you're from here, you know, and you went to Chalmette. You went to UNO, my alma mater. You were in the Army.
Yeah. Well, the Marines.
You were in the Marines?
Yeah, I was in the Marine Corps.
For a long time? Or?
No.
What happened?
Well, I joined so that I could. It's kind of a backstory to why I even joined. But after high school, like during high school, I was into videography. And video production, and then I kind of ran a TV studio at school, and I did my own shows at school. And so after school, I started working for the local parish's school board. They had a TV studio. We produced educational shows. We broadcasted shows from other networks that we got on the satellite feed. I mean, we were an actual station. We were a fucking network. We did everything that a regular network does, and. And I did everything. I everything from building sets to producing a show to editing shows, shit like that. You know, having to sit down with teachers to edit videos for their classes and events they wanted to do. So then I decided to try to, you know, go to school for it, and that's when I started UNO. And then I wanted to start to get a job in a bigger studio in the city. Then I found out the people that were getting the jobs, like the lowest level job you could get in the studio, they were. Like, they were either in there trying to get their internship so they could finish their degree, or they had their degree, and they just couldn't get any job, you know, and it's all they could get. So I was like, well, I was just beating out like that. So I decided I would join the Marine Corps and do combat videography. But that didn't work out. I really tried to get in now. I was like 260 pounds.
Yeah.
And it was like in like September. When I decided to try to start training to get in, and I left in mid-December, and I was 220 pounds at that point. I ran like 3 miles a day, nothing but like chicken breast and salad that had nothing but like, you know, like mustard as dressing. And so I really tried to get in. I really wanted to do it. And the physical part was the easy part for me. The mental part, the mental breakdown, they actually tell you in the beginning, we are going to break you down and then rebuild you. Well, they broke me fucking down. And, you know, I always had suicidal tendencies and stuff like that, but I never really thought it mattered, you know. And then that's when I learned, yeah, it did matter. It mattered a hell of a lot. I ended up slashing my wrist in boot camp in my rack. Woke up the next day alive and upset. I tightened my rack up so no one could tell there was a blood-soaked mattress up there. Put my clothes on so no one could see, really fast, so no one could see it. I was covered in blood. Went and did some PT, ate breakfast, came back. We were doing formation.
So you were covered in blood.
Yeah,
no one was like...
No one could see.
You're covered in blood right now.
Yeah, well, I'm covered in it, but I'm also wearing my camis over that.
Okay.
So no one could see that I'm covered in blood. And my wrists are open. Open, man. Both of them.
And they weren't wrapped up?
Not yet. The blood wouldn't come out anymore because it had coagulated. So
and you didn't pass out?
No, I didn't lose enough. That's why I didn't die. But so during formation, my hand wasn't in the proper place where it had to be. The drill instructor slaps it, blood starts coming out. And that was the end of my career in the Marine Corps. Although I had to stay another week in recruit separation for the stitches to heal before I could get out. But I did get paid for 3 weeks of, you know, being an E2.
Must have been a fortune.
Oh, it was a whole $100.
Wow.
Yeah, after everything was said and done, they gave me $100 to go home.
You know, buy a turkey.
I spent
tennis shoes and a racket and your edible.
I spent half of it on airport food on the way home. And I spent the other half on weed when I got home.
Yeah, that's a good move.
Yeah.
So...
And that's when I decided to go back to UNO. Well, actually, no. I went and became a framer for a while throughout the rest of the spring and the summer. And then I went back to UNO for geophysics.
Did you get a doctor at any point?
I should have. I never got any kind of degree, ever.
No, but I mean, like, for depression or something.
Oh, the diagnosed me. I'm sorry, I heard you wrong. Yeah, in the Marine Corps, they had a psychiatrist there who diagnosed me for being a compulsive behavior disorder and suicidal depressive. And bipolar.
And then they were like, rubber stamp, now you're out, here's your $100, and goodbye.
Actually, no. The funny part about that was the offer to let me go back to training. They gave me the option to go back.
Wow.
Yeah. And I made a lot of drawings while I was...
Did you think about it?
No, not for a second. I'm like, fuck no. I gotta go home. Because I knew if I went back to training, I'd do the same thing over again.
Can you describe the mental breakdown? What do you mean by that?
It's really... it's like... when you're in boot camp, nothing you do is right. Okay? No matter how well you do it, you know, it's either you or the guy next to you is fucking up. And so it's a lot of repetition, you know.
That's how I learned improv.
I think that's it. But anyway,
believe
it's like,
me, it was tough out there.
But not just that, it was, what you call it, you couldn't say a lot of things that were very normal in conversation, like I. You cannot refer to yourself as an I or a me. You had to call yourself recruit, all right? And there was no, like, before you go to boot camp, you hang out with your recruiter and a bunch of other guys that are waiting to go to boot camp. They call it the being a poolie, and they go do events, and it's like they kind of train you a little bit, like they teach you a little bit about drill, you know, and a little bit about military history. Poolie, like isn't a pool of people.
Okay.
A pool.
Just like they're just trying to say you're nothing. You're a pool.
No, like you're one of a group.
Piece of bacteria on the back of a.
Not quite. It's more like to say that you're in a group that we've considered.
Okay.
That's what's more like to say we've considered you to be in our group, you know, and we want to hang with you, and show you our ways a little bit before we bring you all the way in.
And got homemade crackers and hot tamales.
Oh, thanks, man. But see, I love that, man.
Yeah,
entrepreneurship. They teach you drill. They teach you, you know, military history. They teach you about weapons. You know, they bring you on the bases and shit. Teach you about the vehicles. You know, shit like that. And but they don't teach you is how to keep referring to yourself as this recruit. Over and over, this recruit. They don't do that. They don't do psychological training for you at all. The best they do is they hand you a list of fucking movies to watch. You know what list? You know what movie they wanted me to watch when they found out I was like Native American? Like I have a card, the Dakota
what
Cherokee
movie
tribe.
Solves that problem?
Wind Talkers, of course.
We made that Hollywood propaganda film.
We got an engine here. He's going to want to watch this because it's about his people and their Marines. Yeah, it was very, very patronizing.
This was constructed by the government to reinitiate Native Americans into Western culture.
Yeah, well, you know, I went to public school. I'm used to indoctrination.
John Wayne just smacking idiots. What the hell are you doing here, you red-skinned scoundrel?
This is how to re-educate the white man into Western societies.
Yeah, seriously, though. I mean, I grew up under Calvinist religion and I went to public school. Indoctrination is the way of life, man.
Yeah. So you saw some of their game, you know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I saw through everything. You know what? I mean, let's be honest. I didn't want to join the Marines for noble reasons. I wanted my own reasons. I knew why we were going to Afghanistan.
Why?
Because they needed to fucking put a pipeline through it. They needed to connect the oil fields of Kazakhstan to the refineries of India. And
that sounds like a lot
UNICAL
of conspiracy
was having a,
stuff.
No, it's not a conspiracy. This is reality, dude. UNICAL was having a lot of problems getting it done. And it just happened to work out, you know? That's the reason why we're still there, trying to protect that pipeline. We got interests.
Right.
We got interests, man. We got interests.
You might be onto something.
Plus, you know, all that opium, it needs to go somewhere, man. Can't let the Taliban keep that shit suppressed.
Drug dealers.
Fucking right. There's too many people that stand to make money on Afghanistan being in our control. Yeah. Plain and simple.
Why is Senator Mitch McConnell fat? He's a senator, right? He had 90 pounds of cocaine on his private vessel. Right?
I
he's just
surprised.
A senator. He's got that territory. He's selling drugs there. We got opium in Afghanistan. We got the shit wired. And we're only taking down competition with the DEA. Prohibition, man. Gangster style. That's how Kennedy made his money with booze during Prohibition. Gangsters. Gangsters are running everything.
Why wouldn't they? Well, I mean, seriously, when you think about the system that we live under, it favors over time that the aggressive people in society will eventually come to power.
So everything is a battle of good and evil.
Well, see, good and evil are just constructs that people create to decide whether something is something they want to be in line with or not. That's all that is. But it definitely is a battle between opposing forces.
Speaking of good and evil, you this past year got divorced.
Who
was
divorced?
Evil?
See, divorce is a legal term, and we never were legally married.
Yeah.
But we were together for like 7 years. We kind of grew up together a little bit. We had a kid, you know. We
there
called each other husband and wife.
You never did the marriage, though?
No, because of financial purposes.
Right.
You know, she has a rare physical disorder that causes her to shake, you know. And it's like a nerve disorder. Excuse me. So anyway, she can't really hold a job down, so she gets a disability. And you know, on top of that, she because of the disability, she would get insurance through her mom, like for the rest of her life, as long as she doesn't marry. So in order for me to actually marry her, I have to be able to cover that financial burden.
Everything's a hustle, man.
Yeah, you know, I mean, marriage is more of a financial institution than anything. You know, the reasons for being married are not just love. It's got to make financial sense to be married. You know.
Yeah. Well, that's why it's like you get a Ukrainian bride. You know, it's like then they're less expensive than like American women. Right?
Yeah, but what
as long as you get them on the boat, you get a prenup, you get it, then you can actually beat the system legally. You got to tell the tax man, but it's like, how do you make it work for you?
What if she's just trying to get her green card, though, man? What if she's just trying to get in America and then, like, divorce you 4 years later, you know?
That's 4 years of sweet loving.
That's true.
65,
yeah.
You know what I mean? How much would that cost?
Yeah, that's
true. You're just paying for the shipping fees and whatever the tax man needs to know.
No, actually, no. It's actually more detailed than that. You have to. I was reading about it once. You actually have to go over to that country several times.
Yeah.
And then meet up with them, and then eventually you bring them back.
So you know,
it's got to be a legitimate relationship. Or it's got to look like a legitimate relationship. It's expensive.
As comedy, do you find solace in your comedy?
Let's be honest. I'm an artist, and I've always performed every form of art for therapeutic purposes, and comedy is no different. So yeah, in many ways, I do.
What is art?
Art is a definition wise, it's a craft or a skill that can be taught. To me, though, it is a thing you do that conveys a message or an emotion of some sort, or an idea. Like I said, be message. So art can be a guy walking down the street butt naked for the cause of something. Art can be somebody making a beautiful old master style oil painting, you know. And art can be so many different things. Art can be the choice of the lettering you use on a chalkboard to write out what's on the menu today. You know, and art is in, you know, obviously comedy and how you tell a story and how you find the funny in things. And also in art, there's a lot of subjectivism. It's very hard to be objective with art because it's very opinionated as to what, as to whether or not you've gotten your message across, how your message is perceived. You know, I might be trying to say one thing and people see something else entirely from it because the imagery I used meant something totally different to them as it did to me.
Spiritually, what does comedy mean for you, like, spiritually? Like, for me, like, comedy, I think, is my religion.
No, my religion would be science.
Yeah?
Plain and simple. I believe that nothing is worth fighting for. Nothing's worth fighting for unless you can prove it. And the process that you use to arrive to your answer is more important than the answer you arrive to. So that's what puts me at odds with spiritualism and religion, is because it's the opposite idea. You know, in spiritualism, it's an internal look. You know, you believe in something because you feel it, because you know it to yourself, but you can't prove it to anyone else. But in science, you know, I believe in it because I can show it to you. I have proof of it.
And where does that relate to comedy?
Comedy is fun because it doesn't. It's like, in a way, it's an experiment with no known control. You know, like, because in an experiment you have a set setup that you know everything about, and that's your control. And then you have other setups that you do where you modify things. So in comedy, that would be where you go up on stage and you change the inflection, you change the pronunciation, you change the speed, you change the tone, you change the word, and you eventually get a response, or you get a more favorable response by the same group of people. But there really is no actual control because the groups are always changing. And you never get to have a same group all the time to be like, okay, they didn't laugh at this before. Do they laugh at this now?
So because
they never got a chance to laugh at it
before. Every joke's a hypothesis, and you're seeing if the fucking little tickle beakers around the room pop off. If they go like popcorn, you're doing okay. If they're inert, you're bombing.
Basically. So I bomb a lot.
Hey, you're doing science.
I don't give a fuck. You know, I mean, I don't care if I bomb, really. I mean, I do in a way because you can see it on stage. It affects my delivery. I start to stutter more. And then, you know, and the feedback does make me better, and I find that very interesting. But I really don't care so much. You know, it's not, you know, I'm going to do the same joke again. Other guys, like, when they bomb like two or three times on the same joke, they'd say, it's it. I'm not doing a joke again, they say. You know, I'm like, I'm not that guy. I'm going to keep doing it, you know. I'm going to pull up jokes from like 6 months ago that didn't land again, you know, before. You know, I'm going to keep doing it because I think it's funny, and I think there's something there, and I think there's some way, if I keep working at it, if I keep experimenting with it, I can tweak it eventually.
So,
it's more of a social experiment, psychology in a way.
Yeah.
And psychology is, like, they in a lot of other sciences, it's called pseudoscience. A lot of other sciences look down on psychology because it's very hard to have a proper experiment in psychology. It really is.
That's interesting. You've seen some therapists. I've seen some therapists.
Yeah.
They were like, I don't know. Get the fuck out of here. You're creeping me out. And I was like, you should see some of the porn I'm watching for research. Go deep with me. Go dark. Go dark side therapist. Then they start crying. They run out the room. So what do you think about therapy?
Therapy is very interesting because I find a lot of the therapists I've run into are very well-meaning people, but had no clue where I was coming from.
And what do you mean?
Like there were people that maybe thought that they were going to get into it to help others.
Right.
You know, but really had no personal experience with being nuts, I guess.
Right.
Or maybe they did, but it was a different kind. I think the psychiatrist I had in boot camp on Paris Island was probably the best guy I met. But generally, psychiatrists, when you go that far in psychology to the point of becoming a PhD in psychology or get your MD and become a psychiatrist, it's because you're trying to figure out what's wrong with yourself. You know, they know why I'm crazy because they themselves have been there.
Right.
You know, they've personally experienced it. You know,
I think being in the room, how many hours are psychiatrists in rooms with people who are firing way off, and why wouldn't that energy transfer over to them? Well, yeah, they would start to hear enough people said the same things. They heard voices, and they'd go, "Why don't I hear voices?"
Well, you know, the funny thing is, a lot of people that go into it, it's for the other way around. It's because they already are kind of off, right. You know, but they're intelligent enough to know that they're off. Yeah. They're self-aware. And then they go to psychology for that. So it's not so much they got turned as they were attracted.
Now speaking of material, it breaks my heart to bring this up, but we had a little talk about your material one time.
Mm-hmm.
I hope this is okay to talk about.
Yeah, my material's like whatever.
So, but I see like your method of testing the joke in the beaker, like, no, I'm going to keep doing it. I feel like you hang on to jokes too long. And I think you hang on, like, to the Chalmette joke, for example, too long. And I feel like you aren't doing enough drastic changes to try to see. Or just try to do everything different.
Yeah.
I think your idea of what you should put in the experiment box every now and then is a little too limited. And I think you got to test what scares you. And I think you got to be sillier. And I think you got to use your body more, you know, take up more of the stage and stuff like this. Well, so if I were to say anything, I would say those things.
Be honest, though, it's like I was probably doing a Chalmette joke as long as I did because it was getting a good response, and I enjoyed it.
Right.
You know, and then, what you call it? I mean, I am starting to do, I'm doing a set now that's really not hitting too good. It's about healthcare. And me being eccentric, how much money I make. And it's actually, I'm really proud about this set because it's like, there's so many levels to the way it flows and the subject matter, what I'm talking about. And it's real fucking shit. It matters. I think it's very absurd and therefore that's funny. The only time it really ever hits is when I have like an older crowd, I find. But the younger crowd doesn't, the younger hipster college crowd doesn't seem to like it too much or to care about it. And I'm not, you know, like I said, I have no control on it. So I don't know if it's because of the subject matter or if it's because of the way I'm delivering it or what.
It's kind of like you got to, no matter who it is, bring everyone with you. And it's like, how do you do that? You know? I don't know. I don't think you can ever bring everyone, but you can, you know, do things to make sure that even if they're like on the fence, it's like just undeniable in some places. No matter. And I really get in on that, like just ultimate reveals of just humanity being horrible, like that Schadenfreude. Are we laughing at somebody who's fallen over? Are we laughing at somebody? You know, people are admitting what degenerates they are. People are openly admitting, oh, I'm a sex addict. I like this kind of porn, you know, every now and then, whatever. So,
but that's humanity, and that's, you know, it's the way they are. They're absurd. They're convoluted.
Yeah.
They're crazy. It's entertaining. In many levels, as it is scary.
And also, I think that the reason why certain podcasts explode is not because they're interested in anybody, but it's the car crash they're watching.
Yeah. Oh, man, isn't that the reason why we watch NASCAR?
There you go.
Hit the fucking wall, motherfucker.
Yeah.
That's what I want to see. No, I'm sorry. I mean, that's the reality of it. I really wish they would make the cars more crash-resistant. You know, that expect the goddamn crash, you know? Don't make it so that the guy's going to be covered in fucking methanol and shit and on fire because, you know, the car wasn't really made to crash into the wall.
We ritualistically kill people in a figure eight so that we could see what engine is faster.
Let's do races with bumper cars, man. Souped up bumper cars.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What do you think about boxing?
Boxing? Take the fucking gloves off. Since they put the goddamn gloves
on... Why are you putting more gloves on NASCAR and less gloves on boxing?
Because it's different. It's different. In NASCAR, you're going at speeds that your body's never meant to travel at. So if your body was to abruptly stop, you're going to have some serious problems.
Right.
Where in boxing, when we've learned that once you put the gloves on, you see more concussions because now with the padding, the guy's fist doesn't feel the pain of hitting the other guy, right. So he hits him harder.
Right.
And they can go for shots that normally you wouldn't go for with a hand. Like, you don't want to punch someone in the face because the face is hard as shit.
Yeah.
You know, it's bone against bone.
Yeah.
You know, so back in the day, you know, they used to be more body shots.
That's why a head kick motherfuckers that approach.
It's really hard to get your foot that high, though.
Not for me, bitch.
Well, you know.
I'm just...
My sensei, he said anything above the waist.
But, you know, people want to fight me, like Ibrazabal.
Well, they do and they don't, because I don't see anyone actually trying to fight you. It's all words. It's like, it's threats. Like, you know, if I say it, maybe I'll get the same effect as if I did it.
What happened? Okay, I'm not... Let's put this to rest, okay? I have a lot of PR snafus, right? You know, whatever. I see Matt Brown outside of Bufa's. I say, hi, Matt Brown. He says, hey, Eric Hollaback. I say, do you want to talk sometime, hang out? He goes, what are you going to say to all that passive-aggressive? I don't do no beta male shit. I don't do no beta male. Like, I was just kept thinking, like, I got to define that and then figure out that you're using the wrong word in the wrong place because you thought of your joke before you said, like... Without looking at the situation, I'm directly talking to him. Would you like to talk sometime? And then he slinks inside, and I'm the beta male. But he just wants to say something that's.
I don't know, man.
Hey, sorry.
What's going on?
It's
That's all right.
Reality is, I mean, I saw.
After a while.
Is that booze or is that heroin?
Oh, it's hard to tell.
That was interesting, though.
Hard to tell. No, but, you know, I mean, like, you know, sometimes when people get into arguments with you, they don't going to want to talk to you for a while. You know, plain and simple. Thanks, I love that. I needed a shower.
you smell my awful breath?
No, it's droplets can't travel this way. From you.
Sorry about that.
From your man mouth. I mean, we have kissed now. You realize that.
I didn't want to spit beer droplets.
You're lucky I'm not a homophobe.
You're lucky. Gay. I don't know why this rumor is out there.
Hey, you don't have to be gay for me to be a homophobe. You know, that's very, that's a very offensive word, though.
Homophobe?
Homophobe, yeah.
Yeah.
How can you be afraid of things that are the same?
Yeah, and that's the thing. And a doctor actually recently did a test, and he found that the more vocally homophobic people were, they scientifically put those people... in situations where they would watch gay porn with a condom on their penis with electrodes. And the more homophobic they were, the more they went, I hate that! I hate that! They were just screaming, I hate myself.
That's right.
You know what happened during the test? The people that doth protested the much, the most, the people that doth protested the most,
much?
They... exploded the test with their boners watching gay porn.
Well, it's
needless to say,
it's the witch hunt, you know, the witch hunt. It's usually the witch hunting the witch.
What does that mean?
During the Salem witch trials, it was found that usually the person who was doing the most accusations, or even the prosecutors, were actually the people practicing Satanism, and the people they were prosecuting weren't.
Right.
And they were just doing it as a way of distracting the public from themselves.
So what you're saying is the people in the Salem witch trials who were the Jesuits in there are Illuminati confirmed?
No.
Illuminati confirmed?
Illuminati is just like, you know, a bunch of Masons that got together.
What?
And we're all like, we want to be a bunch of rich idiots for a minute. And then people blew that shit out of proportion. Plain and simple.
What's the... Have you ever heard this term? The hipsterati.
No, but I like it because I like combinations of terms. And I like puns.
That's who's holding me down, Blake. Hipsterati. The hipsterati's after me.
Well, the reality
they
is...
They look really good. They spend so much time on their hair to make it look disheveled. Do you know what I'm up against? Do you know how long it takes them to get in their jeans? Do you know how long they shop for shoes? Do you know, I have any idea how long they're living on a roommate's couch, but they're eBaying themselves 80s rock and roll shirts?
Dude, that this is
rock
future,
and roll
man.
Shows they haven't been to.
These are the people that are going to be senators in like 50 years,
but they heard them on vinyl. What I'm saying is I'm up against real... Real delusional assholes.
That's why they call it the me generation.
Wow.
It really is. The millennials, yeah. The hipsters, that's the me generation.
I'm seeing through it.
No, but you know what? It's fine because if you look at the history of our country and the generations we've created, there's a cycle of degradation and then sudden revival. So, something great's about to fucking happen, man. I swear to God.
You think there's going to be a debt jubilee?
A debt jubilee.
I'm telling you, there's a lady.
I sure hope.
Karen Hudes is this lady that I follow very carefully. I'm just plugging her name because I want her to be on my podcast. She yelled at me one time on the phone. Karen Hudes is at the World Bank. She's saying that she's making phone calls. Apparently, they're going to reset the currency because our U.S. dollar's fucked. 6 ways to Sunday, obviously.
Yeah, okay.
New currency, debt jubilee. That sounds good.
Hey, you know what?
She's at the World Bank. She's the lawyer for the World Bank. That's what she's saying.
I say, let the fucking shit collapse. Let it all fall. Because you know what? People are going to learn very fast how much they can do for themselves. I guarantee you. When they realize...
I'm already masturbating heavily. I want you to know that's on the table as a survival skill. If any woodland creature is coming by, coming or going, I'm coming. You know, so that's me in the woods. Continue.
You know what? You know what? All you need, the only survival book you need is the Book of Leviticus. Now you know how I
Jesus
feel about
Christ.
Religion and all that. But the Book of Leviticus actually does lay out the kosher. I believe it's Leviticus. If I'm wrong, it's Deuteronomy.
Kosher. I'm not Jewish. Everyone thinks that. It's my accent.
Yeah,
I'm from New Jersey.
And everyone thinks I'm a fucking Arab. You got to get over it, man. I mean, I was taking my shoelaces off the airport before 9/11. But anyway, it actually does lay out a very basic idea of what you can definitely eat no matter where you go. You know, if it meets those criteria, you can eat it. Guaranteed. You're probably not going to be allergic to it. It's not going to be dirty. It's not going to have disease. It's not going to be full of worms.
What can you eat in nature?
Yeah, like rabbits. Okay, you can't eat rabbits according to kosher law. Because, you know what? Honestly, you can't eat wild rabbit unless it's fucking cold outside. Because of the worms that's in it. Same as coon, same as squirrel.
There's worms in
it? Yeah, there's worms in it. Yeah. I've never actually seen them because I've never, like...
What if you really cooked that rabbit?
People are like, well...
You cook out the worms?
I've always been told it's disgusting and you can pass as diseases. So that's supposedly the reasoning. And you know what? These people, they based it on whether or not someone died eating it. So that's what it is.
That's a rough test to be a part of.
Trichinosis, man. They knew about it all the way back then, 5,000 years ago. They just didn't know that's what it's called. That's why they said don't eat no pigs.
It was tricky. They could get a trichinosis. That's my diagnosis.
I think it's not that. It's tricky, tricky, man. But no, I mean, pig is delicious, but, you know, we've learned that you have to keep it on a structured diet, which is why I prefer farming over hunting, because I know what the fuck it is.
You're a botanist. Now, I don't want to say any kind of green-colored medical medicinal things you... What? Bro? What?
I'm a backyard botanist.
You're a backyard botanist. You had a very interesting fruit the other day.
Yeah, yeah.
It was a large grapefruit.
No, well, technically it's a pomelo.
Okay.
A grapefruit is a progeny of... It's a hybrid of a pomelo and a sweet orange, I believe.
So, you know about botany.
Yeah.
How do you know about this stuff?
Well, I was... I'm a very self-educated person. I was always into reading books. Like, when I was a kid, my mom got me...
gross.
Yeah. My mom, I asked too many fucking questions growing up, so my mom kept buying shit like dictionaries and, you know, she started going to school and I would read her textbooks. She was actually taking medical classes, going to be a nurse, so I had anatomy books and shit. That's how I learned about sex and female anatomy. It was like, I dissected dead people.
Fucked dead people?
No, it was a book. It was a book. You know, that's how they drew the drawings. It was the cadavers. It was really weird. But anyways, my mom also got me this encyclopedia set. It was a scientific encyclopedia set. It was great. The 80s were awesome. You could go to the grocery store, and if you bought so much groceries, you could get a encyclopedia set. And, you know, there was a famous, I think it might have been Chris Rock or somebody, I don't know, someone did a famous bit about that, how they couldn't go past, like, C or something. But anyway, we got the whole set, though, because, you know, my stepfather worked at NASA at the time, so we had a little bit of money. And so I got really interested in sciences growing up, and I got used to the idea that you could read anything to learn anything. And
that's what he told you. He's like, look, I'm from NASA. Just get a book.
And then when I was, no, fuck him, though. He was an asshole. My mom actually was the one that concurred.
Was he an alien?
We don't really know, do we? A lot of questions on that. But anyway,
someone put a chip in his brain if he worked for the government.
He might have put it in his own brain. He designed them fucking chips. But my grandmother,
someone's
she got me interested in gardening, and so because I got interested in gardening, I was interested in science. I eventually got, you know, when I went through school, started learning about the cell, and got interested in botany, got books on botany, you know, things like that.
And now you know how to make clones, you know.
Oh, cloning is very simple.
The sweetest chiba. You know how to make vegetables that are hybrid. So if you wanted to make a grapefruit, what would you have to do?
If you wanted to create your own first grapefruit, you'd have to have, first of all, a lot of resources, a lot of land, and a lot of time. Because
I got all those things.
It would require you to grow at least one pomelo tree and at least one orange tree. And you would have to crossbreed them, you know, on purpose.
So the trees fuck?
Well, you make them fuck.
Oh,
actually, it's more like rape. It's more like...
So every botanist is a tree rapist.
More, you know, artificial insemination without a consent.
Yeah?
Yeah, that's more what you
happens?
Do. Because
this sounds
fucking
hot.
Go out, you pick a flower that's not open all the way, but is about to open.
Oh, fuck.
And that's going to be the one that you're going to make the hybrid of the fruit.
Yeah.
And you cut the petals off, you cut the stamen off.
Wow.
Right?
That's like in Africa, they do clitoral... They cut off the women's cord.
Well, this is cutting off the male sex organ of the flower.
What?
So it's more like chopping off the dick and the balls.
You play rough.
Yes.
Keep going.
So, and then, but you know, but trees are, the angiosperms are hermaphroditic. So they got, you leave the ovule in the state and the pistillet. And then you go to the tree you want to hybridize it with.
Oh, yeah.
And then you find an open flower that that has viable pollen. And you use a Q-tip to collect the pollen, and then you go over to the ovule you've exposed, and you pollinate that. And you mark it, you put like a little tag on it so you know.
So the dick, you just circumcise it, then you stick it in there.
Well, there's no dick in plants, just a vagina. I mean, they call it a pistolet.
Who do you put the condom on?
There's no condoms.
Oh, yeah, you're trying to make
a baby here.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Now, the thing is, you got to do that a lot of times and plant the seeds from the fruit that you get. And eventually,
had a missionary, you might have, like, a lot of land.
Yeah,
do a missionary.
Some or all those seeds are going to end up making the kind of fruit you want, kind of grapefruit you want.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on the type of pomelo you pick and the type of orange you pick, it's going to determine the type of grapefruit you might make. And then, and it may not always, you know, and on top of that, thing is that like the grapefruits you have today were made from older, you know, plants that were more pure in their genetics.
It's kind of like stepfather,
and,
like granddaughter, like sex.
Yeah,
like
if you try to do it today,
you got to fuck that old guy if you want a grapefruit now, because that old guy's been churning out grapefruits. So it's like, he'll give you a quinceanera or whatever, but then it's time to like get doing it because we need more grapefruit trees. I saw that video too last night.
It can be done. Actually, it's the fallacy of the entire fruit industry is that we hung up on the whole you have to graft thing.
Right.
And so we've been doing a lot of cloning, and we got a lot of old genetics out there now. And the problem is that the trees haven't been evolving, but the diseases have. And if we have to go back to...
Yeah, you have to vaccinate them or get them like STD tests and stuff with your trees.
Yeah, there are certain vaccinations you can get from those
What grapefruit diseases are out there?
Actually, grapefruit's not too shabby. Canker's not too bad on grapefruit. And there's the new citrus virus going around. It's not too shabby.
Citrus virus?
There's a virus. It's California and Florida. Yeah. Are having serious problems with it. Decimates the crop. Once the tree has it, it's going to die within a few years.
What's the virus about?
I forget what it's called, but...
is it Ebola?
It's Ebola for citrus. Right. Basically.
So some Spaniard... I don't want to name a country. Spaniard...
Always got to be a foreigner?
Well,
I mean, and then you got to pick the foreigner that I have like part of my ancestry from. I'm from Chalmette, but you know. Basques, you know.
Okay, so Ebers, a Basque Spaniard coughs on a, you know, you're filthy people.
Yeah, we're filthy fucking. You know what? This is a problem here. No one sticks up for the swarthy man. You know, yeah. Everyone sticks up for the white man, the black man, the yellow man,
the
red man, but the swarthy man. I mean, what the fuck? We're called the goddamn mongrels. You know, just because you're dark and hairy, something's wrong with you.
Subhuman.
I know.
Why is it? What's with body hair? You know.
I mean, look, like Ron Jeremy, big famous, the pinnacle of swarthiness. You know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And they call him the fucking hedgehog. It's like, yeah. Really? You couldn't call him the bear?
Because everyone who got molested, their molester was like that. So all of a sudden, his image becomes a porno meme.
That's not
and
true.
And you just want to keep seeing that.
That's
hog
not
go
true.
Into
I've seen a lot of child molesters, and they're very tall, thin, hairless dudes.
Child molesters are hipsters? What are you saying? Are you exposing the hipsterati?
I'm not saying they're hipsters. I'm just saying I've met a lot of child molesters.
Yeah? What kind of circles do you run into?
My stepfather was a child molester.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What was his M.O.? Candy? How did he lure
people in? His M.O. was marry a woman and fuck her kids.
The Ukrainian one?
No, American.
Joseph Fritz style?
What?
Did he have a basement full of girls that were like, this daughter goes to public school. This daughter I molest. Eeny, meeny, miny, moe. You're living in the basement and you're going to gobble my nuts for fucking Jell-O out of a dog bowl. That's the kind of marriage situation I want. But look, I don't want to start a rumor.
Start rumors, man. That's how you have to eat foot. Huh? I was not actually molested.
Oh.
I was beaten. He beat me, he always starting to put me in dresses and cut my dick off. So Gray made a great joke though about
who tried to put you in dresses?
No, he never actually did. He just threatened.
Who tried?
My stepfather.
What happened?
He was an asshole.
Go on.
Well, I mean, he was an asshole. I mean, I don't know. I mean,
every asshole wants to put you in a dress?
No,
like
it's
a specific asshole.
No, every asshole that marries that marries a woman with kids that once that is an abusive person towards children, I guess. I don't know. I mean, that's him MO. His MO, huh? He's dead.
How old were you at the time?
Oh, at the time, he was probably in his late 30s to mid 40s, and I was like a kid. Before I was 10. Like he married my mom when I was like probably about 3 years old. I was almost 4. And then my mom finally left him when I was like 9.
Yeah.
You know.
And he made you wear dresses?
No, he never made me.
What happened?
He always threatened.
Did he threaten anything else? Did he do anything?
He threatened to cut my dick off. He punched me in the head. He beat me. He would beat the fuck out of me. He picked me up one time, like when I was a kid, and dropped me, and I landed on my shoulder, and I couldn't pick my arm up for a week. You know, that kind of shit. He pulled knives on my mom.
Stepfather.
Huh?
What did he do for a living?
He worked for the space program. He designed processors. Actually, the teams he worked on, the processors they designed, eventually went on to run the computers that made Toy Story. But he was a terrible person. He was a very intelligent guy. It's funny too. He was a redneck in the half. We lived in Orlando, Florida, but he drove a Toyota truck, like a pickup truck that was jacked up, like a foot and a half, with big giant mud riding tires.
So all that book learning did not wrangle the redneck out of.
Oh hell no! You can take the redneck out the country, but you can't take the country out the redneck. You know, I mean,
disrespect him. Those are fighting words.
This dude fucking drank Bush beer. You know, he went duck hunting. He took us fishing. He actually took me camping. He gave me my first beer. He made me think I didn't like beer because all he drank was like Busch and Budweiser. You know, I learned better later when I could buy beer and found out what Newcastle Brown Ale was.
I like Stella Artois, but we're not sponsored.
You know, if I'm going to get some sponsorship, you know, I'm going to want some Coastricer. Black Lager is the word they use.
Schwarzbier.
Yeah. Coastricer Schwarzbier. Schwarzbier. It's because that's my favorite beer in the whole goddamn world.
Yeah.
And Pall Mall cigarettes, because they're the mintiest.
And whatever else you might grow. What?
Well,
who's
who
starting
knows?
Rumors?
Hey, you know, I'm going to say it right now. I have the knowledge, I have the ability, but I don't have the gall to grow illegal plants at this time. But were they to become legal?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to be trying to hook. I would definitely start a farm for that. I'd grow pot if it was legal.
Yeah.
It'd be a great cash crop.
Do you think people would, like, smack around their kids if they were high all day?
Hell no. You know what? This is what I remember about growing up and then becoming a parent. And you know, it's like a lot of parents set up situations for their kids to get in trouble. And then they get angry at the kids for the situations they set up.
Right.
Rather than accepting their own responsibility. And a lot of parents would stand behind the whole do what as I say, not as I do. You do it because I said so shit. I don't believe that crap. I think that you should be logical.
Do you think everything that parents smack their kids for is a failure in them? Just like someone who gets a boner while watching gay porn is like, I hate this. These days while they
exactly.
have a
raging boner. Exactly. Any kind of violence is an absolute failure in communication. When you hit your kids, all you're teaching them is that violence is a solution for your frustration, because it's all you're really doing. You're getting frustrated with the kids, so you hit them, you know?
What about, isn't communication the answer then?
Exactly. Level with the goddamn kid. Talk to them like a goddamn adult. I mean, let's be honest.
What if someone said that your kid was a little shit on Facebook?
That's their fucking opinion. You gotta learn to live with that kid.
You ever talk to people, or you just take your opinion from Facebook?
I don't give a fuck about that shit. People got a negative opinion, I leave that alone.
Right.
You don't debate that kind of shit, because it's just you're not going to change them. You're not going to change their view, you know. So you're just wasting your energy and you're just riling them up and and on top of that, you validate their argument.
I got traffic, bitch. Yeah, it's a lot of hate traffic. I have hate boners for me, but it's traffic. I'm just trying to sell Nikes. You know, I'm just trying to I'm going to sell out immediately to sell Nikes, which are made in a sweatshop and God knows where.
Oh, you
by
know
kids.
What? Hey, hey.
Whatever.
There's nothing wrong with that, because you know what?
Point me in the direction of Frenchman Street.
Oh, it's
it's like
way over there.
Yeah, okay, so go that way and then take a left on Elysian and go down
Elysian. Perfect. Yeah.
Take a left at Elysian right there.
I mean, people always diss on sweatshops and shit, but you got to understand that over there, they're pretty much at the same point that this country was at the beginning, where you had factory work and you had field work. And no matter how dangerous that factory work, people still chose it over the field work. Because field work sucks, all right? Factory work sucks too, but for some reason, people always choose it. And because there's more money in it, you know? And it's actually bringing more money to those people, you know? And those people over there, it's as much as we can look upon it, we're looking at it through our lens, through our convoluted, our pampered lifestyle. You know, we're not looking at it through theirs, because it is actually increasing their cost of living, their lifestyle. They're not shitting outside anymore. Some of them are going to get some indoor toilets. They're going to school now. You know, it's helping them.
Hot ladies, those are cheap. You know, so get them from places where there's refugees and sweatshops and stuff. What I'm saying is buy low, sell.
I'm saying we live in a world market
buy
now.
Buy low, get hot. Buy low. You know, you got to think like the rich people.
So. Yeah. You got to save your money. You don't stay rich by spending, you know.
Get one of those expensive divorces with the expensive, you know, whatever.
Oh, God forbid they get half your shit.
All that humdrum. Just because I'm young, dumb, and full of cum, now I got all kinds of humdrum for the rest of my life.
I don't think you can legally say that phrase because there's like a series of porn with that name. It might be trademarked, sir.
Look, I patronize that porn. If I talk to them, I can figure it out. I can show the receipts and be like, I am a fan.
Yes. I have paid you. I can refer to you. Well, maybe they'll send you a few extra tapes.
Look, I'm already... It's already a subscription service.
All right, well, we're doing
it's plug-in. Like a paper tape. Like, you, like, calculate how many tits you saw per minute, you know, and then it's like, we're going to charge your card directly. And you're like, that's fine. Because I'm looking at a lot of tits, and I think I'm getting a good deal.
That's why you pay $10 for a beer at a strip club just to sit in the back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just unlimited tits. It's like the all-you-can-eat buffet. Then they smack them on your face and stuff like this. It's like they're just sending money back to their kid who's working a sweatshop making you Nikes so I can have a sponsorship, so I can sell out, so I can sell Nikes that are made from that girl's sweatshop who's in your face with her boobs in the strip club, sending money back to her kid who's making you Nikes. I'm selling out right now.
Selling out.
As fast as possible.
So I don't got to worry about selling out.
What is art to you, Blake Ebersol? Why, you got the lawnmower rack.
That's right. I got a family business to run, and I enjoy it. I like doing it. It's fun. I get to hang out with my grandpa all day, and I get to see everybody from around the parish.
Who's he fucking? Is he fucking any young girls? Film it for me.
My grandfather, back in his day, my grandfather was a player. He really was. Oh, yeah.
What kind of tale? He had like four
wives. He's had so many children. Not at the same time, but he's has had a lot of children
at the same time.
He's a
smooth operator.
He used to run poker games, you know, back in the day when it wasn't legal.
Yeah.
And it was really cool, you know, because this, you know, it's a part of New Orleans that doesn't exist anymore.
Riverboat gambling.
No, well, backroom gambling. You know, we don't do it as much anymore. I mean, of course, it never goes away, but it used to be all over because it was illegal at one time to gamble. So all the people that wanted to gamble had to go to the backrooms. And, you know, it was kind of cool, though, because he had connections with the sheriff. So the sheriff would call him and let them know when the state troopers were coming in so they know to take all the money off the table and just put chips up. There's nothing illegal, it's just about playing for chips.
Technicality. Whatever you got to tell the tax man, I got four wives.
But he has some stories, man. He's had guns pulled on him and shit, you know, and people were real upset about losing all their money. But it's the way the game goes. It's the way it goes.
What's with keeping things illegal that people are going to do anyway? But
I think it's hilariously silly and then sadly silly at the same time.
It's like you could go to Harrah's Casino, but you can't play like a cash poker game at somebody's house.
Yeah, and you can't play dice in the alley. And it's just, you know, it's a lot of people are hypocrites. You know, they're like, I want to live in a land of the free. I want to be free. But then when you challenge the freedom that they have idea of a freedom, you know, challenge the things that they think you should be free to do, that's when you start to see that they aren't really into freedom. They're just into being allowed to do what they want to do. And then their pet peeves, their sacred cows, they don't want people to do that, you know, and they don't consider that as part of freedom. That's how they make it work. I don't think a lot of people are smart enough really to understand that when you allow people to do something that they're not supposed to do, they are less likely to do it than when you tell them not to do it.
This is kind of like reminds me of like arguments about, like in Japan, you're not allowed to show the vagina.
Well, they're not allowed to show hair.
You're not allowed to show hair.
I'm wrong. They have to have hair. They're not allowed to show a shaved vagina. No, I'm wrong. Right, you're right. They couldn't show hair. That's what it was. They could not show hair. And it was funny because that's why they were allowed to have child porn for a long time. Because the only rule they had was that it could not have hair.
So it's like, what are you telling the taxman? What I find interesting is it used to be every parish in Louisiana had a different code on what you could show in magazine porn. So the governor of every parish, the mayor of every parish, would look through all the porn and go, this is acceptable, this is acceptable. And then he would have a box of things that weren't acceptable. but he would still get in the mail every week.
Yeah.
Why is it that I only want to jerk off to that porn?
Because you're probably the same mentality as that mayor or parish president or whatever the fuck his name would be.
Yeah.
Because honestly, a job like that, if it's eventually going to attract someone that wants to see that kind of shit. It's like J. Edgar Hoover, you know? J. Edgar Hoover is a great example. He had probably some of the biggest secrets to keep. So he became the keeper of secrets in Washington.
He's the president.
No. You're thinking of a different Hoover. J. Edgar Hoover was the FBI director.
Oh, okay.
The famous FBI director that had a male lover that's, for some reason, buried in Arlington Cemetery right by him, or near him, actually.
That's beautiful.
And, you know, he had paid for a man's house and everything. And when J. Edgar Hoover died, they found all these crazy female clothing of him. Apparently he liked to wear high heels and fishnets.
Hoover?
Hey, you know what? You know, we can relate to that where I'm from because we've got Dave Peralta.
Is that your
Look that shit up. That's our parish president. You know, I mean, he hasn't been a really that bad of a bad parish president. Because, I mean, media-wise, I mean, all they've really had on him so far is this horrendous, terrible divorce that's been, like, overly publicized. But, you know, I mean, people do things.
How much publicity did your divorce get?
Nah, as much as I gave it on stage.
Was it different as far as your divorce and the emotions versus the parish mayor?
Hey, you know what? Yeah, he got it way worse because, you know, he's a public figure and all of his shit was drug out in the street. You know, all of his dirty laundry was brought out in the street.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's the problem with being in the public eye like that is that, you know, if you're not comfortable with the things that you have done, I mean, you better get ready, man, because that shit's eventually gonna come the fuck out.
The ability to keep appointments is one of the strongest indications of maturity.
Yeah, yeah, it is.
If you can keep your appointment, if you say, I will be there at 2 o'clock, if you show up at 2 o'clock prepared for the meeting you've entered at, you are a mature person.
Definitely.
If every time you agree to meet with a band, to meet with a professor, to meet with your boss, to meet with anybody, if you're late and unprepared, you're a garbage person.
Well, I wouldn't go as far as to...
You're a garbage person.
I wouldn't go as far as to name-calling, but honestly...
Over and over again.
You know, how hard is it to foresee the amount of time it takes you to do the things you always do? You know, like, honestly, like, when I get a new job, you know what I do? Whatever method it is I'm going to use to get to that job, either by walking, biking, or driving, I measure that amount of time when I go to the freaking interview.
Right.
So I already know the first day how much time to give myself to get there. Because
you're
going
to get
me
to the interview a half hour early, wait in your car, look at your resume, look at what is at stake at this place, walk in there 100% on time,
yes.
Not early, on time.
Yes.
2 minutes early, 90 seconds early. That's when you walk in there so that you can sign with the receptionist.
Well,
and you're exactly on time.
It's like my band director at AJ would say, if you're 5 minutes early, you're on time. If you're on time, you're 5 minutes late. If you're 5 minutes late, you're out.
Yeah. It's just that one principle of keeping other people's time means that you're not showing up everywhere going, they're going to start when I get there.
Yeah.
They're going to start when I get there. That is a mental laziness or a lack of ability to foresee other people's feelings. To, you know what I mean?
Now here's the irony in this conversation is that we perform comedy in this city, which absolutely
well,
does
banned
not...
from a lot of places.
Okay, yes, but you have performed comedy in this city, which, as you have seen, does yes. not ever follow any actual time they give.
Doesn't matter.
8 o'clock show? Nope, we're probably not actually going to start the show until about 8:10 or 8:20. And the first comedian... Oh, wait, the host's got to warm you up now for about 10 to 20 minutes. And then the first comedian's not going to come on until after about, like, you know, about 8:45.
Right.
Maybe 8:30. I don't know. It depends. Because it depends on how they're feeling. Yeah.
Why do I keep getting myself in trouble, Blakey?
Because you're used to insult comedy for some reason. I don't know.
That's what happens.
Did you grow up in the 90s or something?
Yeah, my parents were verbally abusive.
Oh my God, you grew up in the 90s and your parents were verbally abusive.
I was 5 years old in 1990.
Really?
That's the heyday.
So you're like, you're only 5 years younger than me. You're like, you're turning 30 this year.
85. Yeah. October. Cheers.
Turned 35 this year. You're 1 year younger than my youngest sister. No, my youngest sister from my mother. Because I later found out my father had two other girls.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And so he was your stepfather?
No, my father.
Your father?
My biological father who disappeared.
What's going on? He disappeared.
Oh, you don't know about that story?
Where was he?
Oh, okay. See, my father was a con artist, and he was a gopher in the mafia. He was a guy that would call out to handle jobs where physical attributes were required.
He was a muscle in the mob.
The muscle, yes. I've heard some interesting stories. The problem is he was a problematic person, too. Like, one time they called him out to kick some people out of a bar restaurant. They were causing too many problems, you know, being a ruckus. Well, the problem after that was that my father stayed. He kept showing up there, like, every night, every week. He'd eat them out, you know, like, not pay for anything. He just get plastered fucking drunk and eat like two, three steaks and all this other shit. And, you know,
I'm the muscle.
Yeah, it's like, you know, you want to pay your insurance, don't you?
Right.
Ready to pay your insurance? That kind of shit. And then eventually he started, you know, he's a con artist, which means an opportunistic person. Very, because, you know, that's what conning is. It's you know, you're getting people's confidence, and once you have the right opportunity to take from them what they have, that's when you do it. And so he started dealing drugs. He started doing cocaine and heroin. And the problem with being a con artist and a drug addict and dealing with that kind of shit and the mafia all at the same time means that you're eventually going to be... You're gonna get into the red very fast, if you know what I mean. So
he lived above his means.
Yeah, he got way out of his league really fast with some dangerous people and disappeared. For until about 89, 90, he kept popping up here and there asking for money from my grandparents. After that, he stopped. They thought he was fucking dead by 2000. They thought the mob caught up to him.
Yeah.
Getting too family.
Now me. Having grown up with my mother, and now my father's side of the family.
What state was he in when he conceived you?
Here.
Louisiana.
Here, yeah.
New Orleans.
Araby.
Araby,
yeah.
That's where he was conning. Your mom.
Well, he was in the New Orleans area.
Yeah, okay.
You know, he dealt in restaurants and bars out in New Orleans.
He was a muscle for several restaurants and bars.
Well, not specifically those, you know, establishments so much as the organization that was behind... helping them out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The Cosa Nostra.
Did he murder people?
No. He was not that kind of person. Muscles are not hitmen. Hitmen are a special breed, if you will.
But if you needed some tough guy to go with you to a business meeting to intimidate someone,
that's him.
You'd call him.
That's the guy. He was very barrel-chested, muscular, hairy, swarthy man.
So before the business meeting, they would go, listen, this guy's going to try to chicken shit me on the backroom deal. What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to fuck his daughter, and I need all of his cocaine. So what I need you to do is I need you to grab the briefcase before we even start talking. Then you start looking at his daughter. We're going to make grandpa granddaughter porn, which Eric Hollerbach likes. Later on, you're going to beat somebody up.
That is not how it works in the mob, man. That is only how it works in, like, the Eric Hollerbach porn mob fantasy. Which
that's
actually,
the kind of porn I watch.
I would watch that. I would totally watch that scenario.
Well, what I'm trying to say is that's my reference. Fill in the details.
You go. No, but, so anyway, so he...
I'm trying to relate to you.
Anyway, so I'm a bit of a narcissist, and I'm a researcher.
Okay.
So I was always putting my name into Google and seeing what pops up. And eventually, a few years ago, Bill Ebersabel comes up.
Bill
Ebersabel. I'm like, no, come on. There's only so many Bill Ebersabels in this world. Because, like, you know, here's the thing. I was almost Bill Ebersabel. All right? Like, because my father is William Ebersabel the third, which makes his father the second, his father senior. And then my mother, her brother was William Laughlin. Not a junior,
but
her father was, I believe. So it was weird. Like, he should have been a third or a junior or something like that. But anyway, so she at least had a father and a brother named William, and she had a husband named William, and she had, like, a father-in-law and a grandfather-in-law named William. So all these fucking Williams everywhere, and she's like, you know what? No, we're going to name some Blake.
Wow.
So,
you're marking the millennials.
I was almost William the
William IV. That's a me generation. Look how cool my outfit is. I'm in poverty. Keep going.
Different. So, anyway, so, yeah.
I'm a comedian.
So yeah, it was on the his name came showed up on the Pawn Stars page on Wikipedia. So
he's
looked up
Pawn
the
Stars.
Pawn Stars, and it was at the, as a boat expert. And I was like, that's kind of weird. So I looked at the episode that he supposedly was on, and I saw it, and it was this like very obese, balding, like horseshoe, you know, shaped hair kind of bald guy with a mustache.
Proper bald.
You know, very overweight. And but when he cocked his head back and laughed, I knew it was my dad. Because he looked just like my grandfather. Just like him. And so my aunt actually, she's the one that found his phone number for me. Because she found his business, A1 Marine, it was out of Stuart, Florida. And she was able to find his business phone number through like some cooperative extension or something like shit like that in Florida. And gave it to me, and so I called him, and made a connection, we started talking. He told me about how he was married to this woman, and, you know, had these kids, and, I told him about how I had, you know, my wife at the time, and had my kid, and, we were supposed to hook up one time, and, he ditched out on me. I was down in Florida, like, Gina and Marcus were living in Florida, this is my son, Gina's my ex. Let's let these people pass.
Was he pulling a clone on you? Did he need a kidney? Did he need a liver?
He was just being his normal self, which was basically tell you what you think he thinks you want to hear. You know? And then when it came down to the time to actually do it, you know, yeah, he just didn't show up. It's been July 4th in Key West, and on the drive, he knew that we were going to meet up the day after, or the day after that, and so I tried to, you know, call him, left two messages on his phone. I didn't actually leave any messages. I'm sorry, I left a message on the second one. I called both of his numbers, left a message on the second one. He never bothered to try to contact me until after he knew already I would be back home. It was like the Monday after I already came home, like that Sunday. He's like, what happened? Like,
keeping appointments is what.
It's like,
that's a measure of a man right there. Keeping appointments.
But, you know, it's whatever. Fuck him, dude. You know, he didn't want to know who I was growing up. He doesn't want to know who I am now. You know, maybe he does, but maybe he doesn't want to be that involved. Whatever it is, don't care anymore.
Does that put a fire in your belly that makes you want to do stand-up comedy?
No, actually, it quenches a lot of the anger I had, because I felt like I was deprived of something growing up, not having my father, and then having this stand-in guy who didn't really do the job.
He didn't do the job. He was trying to make you wear dresses, and he was working for NASA and screaming at you.
Yeah, it did. I mean, it helped me become an artist, because it taught me to, like, you know, turn in, you know, go inward, look into myself, because it's either that or go kill myself, go crazy, or kill him.
I can't get over, you know, what's gone on to you, where you've gone on to attempt suicide in the army.
I don't know.
Walking around.
Why do you keep saying army?
Navy.
Okay, but Marines is the word. Navy is like not as bad.
Do you know how soft these palms are, sir? I'm a modern gentleman.
Yeah, I see. You're missing these, like, see these pads that I have here?
I don't have
these
bear claws.
I call these grip pads.
Right.
Other people call them calluses.
I can tie box though.
And you see these? See how it's dark on the knuckles? Yours aren't. Because I've been in a million fights. I grew up in Chalmette, dude. Like, you know what I learned in middle school? How to take a punch. That's what I learned.
You duck and roll with it?
Yeah. Well, dude, you got to learn a lot. I mean, I ended up taking karate classes, and for that I took some Middle Eastern martial arts, like Krav.
What do they do?
Krav Maga. Krav Maga. Evil shit.
Is it all? But Krav Maga is just based on
opportunistic.
If you see a woman do something, crack, crack, boom.
A woman.
What?
You say see a woman do something? No.
From Palestine. No, you see a woman from Palestine. And you're a,
only
you're
the
a
rednecks.
Ba ba boom.
It's not a woman. No, no, no. Guys, it's opportunistic. Yeah, you probably will. That's very misogynistic. But it's a very opportunistic fighting style. It's a very brutal fighting style. Once you learn it, once you've attained muscle memory of the moves, you become a very dangerous person in a fight. Because you no longer, once you attain muscle memory in any martial art, that's the thing you're most likely to do in a situation. And Krav Maga is so brutal that if that's what you're about to do, you don't want to get in fights.
Because you got to get lawyers involved. Whatever you have to tell a lawyer.
Yeah.
I got 4 Ukrainian brides. Okay, whatever you got to tell a tax man. They're 19. I'm 65. Do you know the work and manipulation I had to do to pull this off? I had to talk to the government. I had to fly to Croatia 20 times. But now I got her. She lives in my basement. She's got a doggy bowl. Capitalism. You buy low. Buy low, sell high. See, I mean, if you just think about it, you can think like the tax man.
Upsell.
What you do is take a note card, you staple it to the ceiling, and it says JFK. Go down. Golf of Tonkin. Boom, boom. The hips Rotty. Go down. Boom. Bandit High Ho. Boom. You take staples. Pretty soon, you've got a network like a spider web in your bedroom.
Yeah.
When you can't even move, you've got to use
the red twine to do it, man. It's the only one that
different
works.
Different color twines. Then you remember. Then you just see the metadata of the battle you're up against in your life.
Yes.
You don't even, you know?
And but you know, if you use different colors, you're going to have to put a legend up to signify what each color means.
Then you do LSD, you put Pink Floyd on it, you lay on your bed, you look up. Boom.
It's like all your personal connections and civilization.
You just walk through the spirit world, and like when people are mean to you on Facebook, when people are, you know what I mean? They're like, you're banned from here. You're just walking through the metadata of the emotions of the situation, and you're just like, oh, okay, I see. I'm going to shoot truth lasers around. I'm going to open my heart, and I'm just going to say I'm a sexual degenerate, and that's why I got myself in the hot water. I'm clearly insane. Ba-boom. Truth lasers. And then all of a sudden you can start running shows and being nice to people.
I just need to get the offensive show started.
No.
That's all that really has to happen. Fuck all this shit. You know?
What is art, Blake Ebersabel?
Art, what is art? It's a good question. You know what? My art is my thoughts, my feelings, my emotions.
What is your stand-up art?
My stand-up art is my thoughts.
What are you getting out of it?
You know what? I get to talk. I get to talk where people don't get to speak, get to talk back to me. So I get a time to get the whole thought out. If it takes me an entire 5 minutes to do it, so be it. If they enjoy it, that's great. It gives me some feedback on that. It encourages me to that other people may think that way. And if they don't, then I get to cop out and call them, you know, I just get to say that, oh, they just don't understand.
You don't understand? You're just a little piece of unpopped popcorn in a microwave.
Yeah,
I'm doing science
right
now.
Where I'm from, man. You just don't get it, man. You haven't had my experiences, man. Yeah. It's still a cop out. Fuck it, whatever.
Just move around more. That's all I'm saying. Move around.
But you know, I've actually found I've gotten more results when I don't move as much. When I don't wear my nose ring, when I don't wear my glasses, when I don't wear the trench coat, when I don't give people things to focus on other than what I'm saying.
Stuff. That's not what's going on.
I don't know. I think they focus on that. And then when I speak too fast, when I get too emotional. I think being a big guy, I found that I'm not allowed to do certain things because they're not going to be taken the right way. Like that a little guy can get away with. A little guy can raise his voice. No one really gives a fuck. When I raise my voice, everyone gets afraid. You know?
Uh-oh, you're the scary uncle. I know what's coming next.
I'm too big. I'm too big.
Is there a camera in the room?
Yeah.
Is Hollaback beating off?
It's like when you see a smart car go down the street, you don't think anything of it, you know, when you're driving. But when you see a big, giant Mack truck go by, you want to get the fuck away from that shit. You know? It's a perception. The size thing, you know, is a perception of, like, what I'm going to do.
Huh? Jesus.
Well, I find that by being more monotone, being more basically deadpan, you know, I get a better result in my jokes. When I find that when I'm like, you know, moving my eyes, you know, widening and closing them and shit, and I'm like getting emotional with it, I'm like, you know, changing my tone, people don't laugh.
You're tough to think about because
you just don't.
What are you working on right now with your material? What do you want to do with your stand-up?
I guess in a way, I really admire Lewis Black and is a you know how he just gets up and talks about the things that irritate him in life and the things that he feels are just absolutely ridiculous that we do, and I find it encouraging that there's someone else out there that kind of feels a lot like how I do. In my life experience, and that, like, you know, like that's something that people are apt to listen to, and so maybe they're willing to listen to my pet peeves and my issues, my ideas. But at the same time, I also admire guys like, you know, Mitch Hedberg, you know, and Dimitri Martin, you know, have these very out there strange ideas like I have that I think are just fucking hilarious. You know, and so I mean, like, you know, I guess in a way, it's like I feel that I already have it. You know, I already have these ideas and have these jokes, and there's these other people that have done them on some level or something of that nature, and so therefore there may be an audience for that, for what I have, and so I'm looking for that. I'm looking for that audience. Because it's an art, and you know you have to find your in any art you have to find your audience. Because you know you can't just show up to Bourbon Street and play hardcore black metal, man. It just ain't gonna happen.
But what if your like girl is pregnant? You know you gotta start thinking about alimony because the Russian bride is in a container ship and she comes closer and closer every day. You know you're on 20. She's gonna land on Tuesday. This is Friday. You know you got a lot of bills. What are you going to do as an artist?
Wait, she's landing on Tuesday and it's Friday.
It's Friday.
She lands Friday
and
it's Tuesday.
You got to show Saturday and Sunday, but you also have your regular bitch, your bottom bitch. You know?
But if she's landing, does that mean you can catch a ride back out?
Your bottom bitch is pregnant.
Can you hop on the ship while she's getting off?
When she's coming?
Yeah, like when she gets landed, can you get the fuck on there?
Because
no. If so, I would do the ultimate comedy cruise.
Go for it.
The intergalactic comedy cruise. Fucking right, dude.
What's the intergalactic comedy cruise?
That's when you jump on the fucking ship while she's getting dropped off from the spaceship. That's when you get the fuck on there and you're like, dudes, all right, all you gotta do is feed me and give me a place to sleep and I'll tell you fucking jokes like every night for like an hour.
That's how a lot of comics make a living.
Fucking right, dude.
We don't like each other.
Fucking right. And I was be like, you know what? You don't even got to pay me for this shit. Just drop
me
back.
I think the cruise ship gig is the end of the rainbow for this story.
Like, you know, on Earth... No, sorry. We're not going to do some crazy-ass Yakko Smirnoff Earth jokes. But that would be the thing, you know, right?
Yeah. So cool. Get paid while during an all-you-can-eat buffet.
That means like
Lake Ebersobel, it's been a pleasure. I think we delved deeply into your mind. It's been another episode.
Actually, believe it or not, we've only gotten to about the point where the light starts to get dark.
The tip of the iceberg.
No, the tip of the iceberg is above the water. You go down below the iceberg. You stop. The light waves start to dissipate.
Right.
There's a whole level that goes way down deeper until you get to the abyss.
So we just saw like the tip of the crustacean's head,
yeah.
And it twitched in the light, and it's like, ah, there's so much more to Blake Ebersobel. I did not encapsulate every piece of his ego onto the Highway Diary podcast. I'm giving you a little glimpse. please give Semi hate mail. I love when you tell different venues not to book me. I love when you guys get on the internet, you get real active, and you're like, this guy is a bigot. I love that, because it just drives traffic, so keep doing it. I got lots of fans. Blake Ebersabel, ladies and gentlemen. Click through the Amazon link on the Highway Diary RSS feed, and hopefully someone's exploited during the process, and I might get a nickel in return. We're all being used by the hipsterati. Thank you, Blake.
Wait, that does bring up a point, though. Like, we're in entertainment, aren't we? Isn't that exploitation at its finest?
I'm a whore. So who
isn't
said?
That what we're here for?
Exactly. Look, if I find myself in a Craigslist anything goes situation, I'm going to do the dirty work. I know I got to work myself to the top. I'm a weird-looking guy. But I'll do the jobs that other people won't do. I'm from the bottom. I'm trying to get up in this crazy world. That's been another episode of Highway Diary. I'm your host, Eric Hollenbach. Later.